from 4 till 7.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Half past five, almost anyway, and my guest today is Chris Carr. Now, Chris is here from the Hearing Healthcare Centre. It's a company which is celebrating 50 years in business. Hello, Chris. Thanks for coming into 105.
Hello, Julian, and thank you for having me here.
Absolute pleasure. So the business, has it been in your family for all of that time, or did you acquire the business?
No, I acquired the business back in 83. It was originally in Coulson's Chemists in Bridge Street and had been trading there for quite a few years prior to my taking it over. And we originally moved it from there to Mill Road, and then we moved to our present building in 96, which is in Chesterton High Street. So we've been going for quite a number of years.
And it's a strange question perhaps, but how do you get into the hearing aid? You can imagine sort of opticians and how that kind of works out. But what got you in the business in the first place?
It was something that I've always wanted to try and do in terms of helping people or animals. And I actually answered an advert for one of the major hearing aid companies at the time. Mm. And was very fortunate to get the job, and started off in their London head office in Grosvenor Street, and got through all my exams and certificates, and continued working for them for about 6.5 years. Then I was taken over by or invited to join another company who was a major wholesaler in hearing aids and audiological equipment, so I broadened my knowledge. Mm. And then the back end of December 1982, had the opportunity of taking over this business in Cambridge, so we moved up here.
Mm. Well, despite the best efforts of my fellow 105 presenters, my hearing is fine, but I do wear glasses, and I go to an independent optician's. I like the service. I like sort of make a little bit more of a fuss than you may get out of one of the high street names, and also I tend to like these sort of the range of frames that they offer. There's quite a selection, and I'm wondering if it's a similar sort of principle if somebody is choosing a hearing aid, if there is that advantage to going to, say, you know, somebody like yourself, as opposed to, I don't know, answering some sort of advert in the national newspapers.
Yes, of course, it's very much the same situation. The national chains obviously work with one or two main manufacturers, so you're limited to that range, whereas myself and many of my colleagues who work independently have the choice of all the different manufacturers.
Are there many for this sort of thing?
There are approximately 8 different manufacturers now. There used to be a lot more, but obviously over the years that has reduced down. But there are majorly 8 manufacturers worldwide, and many more in America and outside of the UK, but within the UK we have roughly 8.
And does it mean that you're sort of selecting from, you know, you presumably work out, you know, what the difficulty is with somebody's hearing, and then after that, what's the criteria? Is it one which fits nicely on the ear, or is it the manufacturer who has the technology which is closest suited to solving that particular patient's problem?
Well, we take into consideration the lifestyle of the individual, their age, their dexterity, and therefore whether they can manage a very small hearing aid or something a bit larger to, you know, depending on their needs. But obviously if somebody is still very active socially, they need something with plenty of technology to be able to manage various listening situations in quiet and in very noisy situations. But somebody who may be more housebound and less able to get out doesn't need those higher end technologies, but they still need to be able to hear the television, or when there's 2 or 3 people, or if they go to a restaurant once in a while, they need to be able to manage that situation.
Mm. And is it also a matter of trying to find a hearing aid which can be discreet for the patient? I'm thinking for glasses, if you don't particularly want to wear glasses, you have the option of contact lenses. Mm-hmm. But a hearing aid has to go somewhere, doesn't it?
It does. It's generally either in the ear or very deep in the ear canal, or we now have very, very tiny instruments that sit behind the ear with a tiny little wire linking it to the loudspeaker, which we call a receiver, that disappears inside the ear. And actually that can be even more discreet when actually worn. It might not look that way in the hand, but actually on the ear, I'm actually now struggling to see some of my male clients as they walk in to see whether they're wearing their hearing aids or not. Most times they are. So that's not my sight. My sight is still pretty good.
I was going to ask about that, really, because over not 50 years, because I'm fairly obvious you haven't been working for all of that time, at least not in the hearing aid business. But since, say, the early 1980s, when you first started, how has hearing aid technology changed? Have they been able to get them smaller?
Or, yes, very much so. The technology when I started, I actually started in 1970, was very much printed circuit boards with transistors that you could actually see and solder yourself. And they were fairly large bananas hanging around behind the ear or body-worn instruments, much like a large iPod with earphones.
Yes.
The body aids disappeared more or less in the 70s, late 70s. And at about that time, we started seeing custom-built all-in-the-ear hearing aids, which were still quite large. But those have miniaturized and miniaturized so that they're virtually invisible in the ear canal now. And the behind-the-ear instruments have gone from the larger size with a large tube, which was fairly obvious, and a fairly obvious ear mold, to this, as I say, very tiny little instrument with a very tiny wire that looks more like a hair running down the sideburns into disappearing into the ear canal, and you really have to look to see what if the instrument is there or not.
Yeah.
We have them color-coded to match hair so that, again, they disappear very easily behind the ear.
Now, so, I sit down here at 4 o'clock every afternoon, and a variety of presenters precede me according to what day of the week it is. And I sometimes get the feeling that half of the Cambridge 105 presenters are deaf and the other half are going to be deaf simply because of the volume which the headphones are left up at. Mm-hmm. And obviously it doesn't just affect radio presenters. A lot of people, you simply see them on the streets. You mentioned the iPod yourself a few moments ago. Yeah. You see people with the earbuds or whatever they call them, or sometimes even actually what looks like full DJ-sized headphones.
Yeah.
And I just wonders what that, you know, if there's a danger that that's ultimately going to affect somebody's hearing.
Yes, that is a situation which has been in evidence even since the Sony Walkman tape deck things, more so in those earlier days than possibly today, because there wasn't a limit on the sound output of the headphones in those earlier days. I think most manufacturers now are cognizant of the fact that loud sounds can cause damage and have a limited output on the headphones, but that sometimes can be bypassed. So yes, there is a danger from exposure to loud sounds on a regular basis that could damage that, and that's part of why we call ourselves Hearing Healthcare Centre, because we're not just into helping hearing impaired, we're also into sort of advice on maintaining your hearing and preventing damage in the first place. So we do actually supply a large number of musicians and all sorts of activities like shooting and motorsport with custom-made ear protection for that purpose.
So this is, I don't know, for the sake of argument, you've got a guitarist in a heavy rock band and he's going to be right at the centre of things, or maybe a sound engineer hanging around by the speakers. They would perhaps come to you and you'd be able to sort them out
exactly.
with something just to prevent it. It's a bud, I guess, or something that fits in the ear?
It's actually, we take an impression of the ear and we make a custom-built fitting, which will have a filter, or it could be an electronic monitor mold, if in the case of a musician. As you see nowadays on most of the modern groups, they're all wearing these color-coded earpieces that have wires dangling down the back.
Mm.
We can access those and make those for people. And there are various charges depending on the sophistication of those things. I actually had one gentleman, a Scotsman, who was a piper and only had one usable ear and was worried about the damage that he might be doing. And we actually measured the sound level of his pipes in the room, and it came to about nearly 100 decibels.
And according to the quality of his playing, is the danger of those people in the room with you, I would have thought.
Yeah, it was only a short burst, but it was
just as well.
As I happen to like piping, it was quite a pleasant experience for myself, but only in a short burst.
Yes, no, I'm sure. Well, Chris, absolutely fascinating speaking to you. Have you got any sort of special things coming up because of your 50th anniversary?
We do. We have the Deputy Mayor coming on Monday to open events. We've got 5 different manufacturers coming on 5 days. We've got a lovely cake with the 50th anniversary.
Oh, cake is good.
cut up and share amongst the visitors to our open event. So we've got various photographers and various staff are already briefed. We've got some nice bubbly ready for people if they want to have a little supple when they come in. So we've got quite a lot happening.
Well, I can see a lot of people queuing up, suddenly realising they've got hearing problems now. That sounds pretty good.
And the other thing we're doing is our charity of the year is the Help for Heroes. We've got a representative from Help for Heroes, and we're running raffle tickets for some lovely prizes that the manufacturers have put up for anyone who wants to come along and support the Help for Heroes as well as our open days.
Right. So at any time, do people go to your website and they can find out the information about this?
Yes, it's on the website, and on the day we're actually selling the raffle tickets for these rather nice prizes. We've got a Fortnum Mason's hamper worth £100. There's £100 worth of arts theatre tickets and a chop house tickets and such like. So there's quite a few nice goodies to be had.
Sounds very good indeed, although my mind's still fixated on the cake. Chris Carr from the Hearing Healthcare Centre, thanks very much for coming in tonight.
It's a pleasure.